United States against Anderson.
Good morning.
Mr. Craven.
Thanks, and may it please the court. I am Jim Craven from Durham, North Carolina, representing Gerald Anderson. I'm not going to abandon any of the arguments made in my brief, but because of time limitations, may not fully argue all of them. Judge Castillo initially ruled with the defendant and chose Section 2C1.2 of the guidelines to apply to Jerry Anderson's sentencing, and he did it for good reason. It fits. In the Sentencing Commission commentary, 2C1.2 applies to the offering, giving, soliciting, or receiving of a gratuity to a public official in respect to an official act. And that commentary specifically equates gratuity and bribe. I commend to the court the sentencing colloquy, particularly between Judge Castillo and the government, at pages 8 to 15 of the government appendix. The D.C. Circuit in Sun Diamond Growers of California said that the giver, the payor, must intend either to reward some past official act or to enhance the likelihood for some future act. And here, as the government evidence showed, the defendant paid Jim Meesch, the alderman, a total of $5,000 when he was an alderman and $1,000 after he left office. Now, the government, in its brief, suggests that none of our cited cases...
I may be missing something here, but I thought Sun Diamond was about which statute was the right one to prosecute under rather than the choice of a guideline.
Well, there was controversy in Sun Diamond. Of course, Sun Diamond was appealed. There was controversy over the choice of the guideline there. And I simply point out that was that the thrust of the appeal to the D.C. Circuit? No, it was not. It was, as Your Honor suggested, the statutory differences. But the district court in Sun Diamond Growers chose 2C1.2 over 2C1.1, and that was not disturbed on appeal. In addition, the case of Archibald Schaffer was an appellate case from the D.C. Circuit, as were Brewster and Campbell, while Muldoon is an appellate case from the Fourth Circuit and Sawyer from the First Circuit. Now, Judge Castillo changed his mind at sentencing and switched from Section 2C1.2 to 2C1.1 because of this court's 1997 decision in Agostino. Now, I'm not sure Agostino fully resolves this issue, though. And again, the sentencing colloquy is important here between the judge and the government. And in the end, a false ending as it happened, Judge Castillo found that either 2C1.1 or 2C1.2 could apply. And as he put it, the tie goes to the defendant. And then that afternoon, everyone discovered Agostino apparently over the lunch break, and Agostino holds that a bribe is for future actions, while a gratuity is for actions already taken or promised. Well, that's fine as far as it goes, but Agostino, I suggest, is awfully broad in light, for example, of certain statutory and guideline language. Now, let's go back for a moment to the very interesting case of Archibald Schaffer in the D.C. Circuit. Schaffer was charged under a similar statute, 18 United States Code Section 622, payment with intent to influence official actions, obviously in the future. And he showered the Secretary of Agriculture with gifts. That statute says nothing about acts in the past, yet 2C1.2 was applied to Schaffer. Now, I contend there's no real discernible substantive difference between Jerry Anderson in this case and Archibald Schaffer in that case. Nor is there any difference between Anderson and Diamond Growers, Muldoon, or Sawyer.
Well, how would you articulate the difference between a bribe and a gratuity?
I wish I had a definitive answer to that. I mean, it's a question that, I mean, I don't have the definitive answer to that, and neither do most courts, apparently, because I don't think the 1990s...
Well, it seems fairly straightforward to me. Maybe I'm missing something.
Well, it on the surface, it is. In Agostino, the 10-year-old case from this court, in that case, it's very straightforward. In that a bribe is for something to be done in the future, while a gratuity is for something already done. But that's contradicted by the sentencing guidelines and, in some cases, in statutory law, for example, in 18 U.S.C. 622. Agostino, read by itself out of context, is perfectly clear. And we might be better off if that were the universally acclaimed distinction between those two definitions.
If it isn't that, what is it? That's
well, Judge Castillo had the same question, and that's why I commend to you the sentencing colloquy in the district court between Judge Castillo and the government. He had exactly the same question. He said, "Why do we have these two? They're one and the same." And he concluded that because of that, the word he used was equipoise, and he said the tie goes to the defendant.
Counsel, why wasn't the offer to pay off the public works director plainly a bribe?
That is more plainly a bribe. There's no question about that. I mean, that's in a I have a much more difficult time with that than I have with the payments to Jim Meach. But we're talking about, you know...
Well, Meach did him some favors before, and he did him some favors after, so that creates a certain amount of confusion.
Well, you're right. Remember that Meach, the star government witness, testified that all of these projects are good projects. They were all good for the city of Aurora. Remember that all the city council votes were unanimous. And as I said in my brief, you know, some money might win a close election, but it's not going to cause a landslide. I think 2C1.2 belongs here. I think a case can be made for 2C1.1 or 2C1.2. And that's where the rule of lenity, I think, comes into play. Either one fits. And Judge Castillo recognized that and asked the government, why do we have these two? You know, they're the same. Either one fits.
Well,
therefore,
Anderson had a problem, and he wanted something done to solve his problem. So then he starts passing money around. Now, that sounds like a bribe to me.
Well, it does indeed. It also sounds like a gratuity under the various courts' definitions and the guidelines' definitions of gratuity. And I'm with Judge Castillo. He said, why do we have both of these? They're one and the same, and therefore the tie goes to the defendant. And then, of course, he changed his ruling later on. But I think he was right the first time, even in light of Agostino. Now, in terms of the dollar amount, now this comes into play, too. In terms of the dollar amount of the benefit to the defendant, some presidential candidate talked about voodoo economics once. Well, here I think we've got voodoo accounting. It simply makes no sense, and I hope the court will examine it carefully. The government's accounting ignores the obvious. For example, the return of capital investment to the defendant. That's not a gain. That's getting his money back. And the government's accounting ignores the fact that the 1998, and I stress 1998, Aurora LLC partnership agreement, I stress that date because the indictment says that the first bad acts in this case happened in 2001, 3 years after that. Well, the 1998 partnership agreement set the capital contribution at $900,000 and Aurora LLC still owed the defendant $1.5 million, maybe more. The government ignores the fact that there was no significant gain on the Eola Road property. We contend, for the reasons set forth in both of our briefs, that the total benefit for guideline purposes here should have been $41,000 odd. Now, Judge Castillo.
Well, that's the Eola Road money,
sir?
Right? It's 41.
Well, that's right. That's right. Now, I'm in some sympathy.
Now, does anybody disagree with that? That's.
I think the government disagrees with it, but the judge agreed to that.
Well, I mean, if you add in other property, you got to disagree with it. But is there any argument about Eola Road?
You mean on the $41,000 figure? I don't think so. No, sir. No, I think everybody agrees with that.
Now, what's your position on the other two properties?
Well, I think the Montgomery property has absolutely nothing to do with this case. That's outside the city of Aurora. The Tennessee property clearly has nothing to do with it, and I think the Aurora property, I think that comes in at zero here because of the return of capital. Now,
well, isn't this brought in as relevant conduct? Is that the theory of it?
I think that is the theory of it. I have a good deal of sympathy.
If it was worth zero, then why was he paying bribes?
Well, that's a good question, too. I don't have an answer for that one. I mean, I may as well say that. I have a lot of sympathy, though, for Judge Castillo. Judge Castillo, after the arguments of both sides on the dollar benefit, said, in essence, both of you have made good arguments, and I'm going to come down somewhere between $400,000 and $1 million. Now, how did he arrive at that conclusion? We don't know. He did not share that with us. He clearly had difficulty with that. I've had difficulty with it. The government's had difficulty with it. An accounting background would help in this case, and I don't have one. When we get to the dollar benefit area of this case, which we don't have to get to, by the way, if the court agrees with me that 2C1.2 is the governing guideline section. But I think the dollar benefit question in this case is something that both sides and Judge Castillo and probably the probation officer, too, have wrestled with a great deal. And certainly I have. I also, and remember, as Bill Lindley, one of the witnesses, noted, and I had difficulty with this till he explained it to me, a Burger King restaurant can indeed be built on top of a pond, which I thought was interesting, but it's significant in the use of those retainage ponds. Now, Judge Castillo also at sentencing, and I really have to take issue with him on this, talked a great deal about three governors, some judges, 20 lawyers, cops, all coming before him or before the Northern District of Illinois Court in public corruption cases. Well, that's fine, but it doesn't. That has absolutely nothing to do with Jerry Anderson, nothing whatever. And I think the implication that maybe this wasn't the first time Jerry Anderson had done this is absolutely unwarranted without any evidence whatever. Judge Castillo also said that he did not intend, for his sentence of 72 months to be a death sentence for Jerry Anderson, but I fear, frankly, that that's what it will be. Because of his deteriorating health. And I commend, it is in evidence that his kidney specialist physician at Vanderbilt University said that any form of incarceration is likely to markedly worsen his health and may lead to his death. And unfortunately, I think Dr. Culper is on point there. We commend, I ask the court at the very least to remand for resentencing in this case after some more accounting evidence. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Craven.
If I have any time left, I'll reserve.
Mr. Fox.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Brandon Fox on behalf of the United States. I'll start with the first issue that Mr. Craven addressed, and that's whether this is a bribe or is it a gratuity. And I think Agostino is very clear here that this should be treated as a bribe. As Your Honor pointed out with respect to Mr. Reeser, these payments occurred at the same time he was asking for official acts. He was asking Mr. Meisch to go do things for him, meet with city council people, meet with other town officials, and at the same time he was passing him $2,500 in cash under the table. And obviously that was intended to influence future acts. With respect to Mr. Reeser, there's obviously the way that it was approached, the way that it occurred, it was an intent to influence a future act. Mr. Meisch walked in to Mr. Reeser's office and said, Mr. Anderson's been good to me in the past. He can be good to you in the future. There will be $10,000 waiting for you if you can get some things done on the Eola Road property. There were things that could not be done otherwise. Mr. Reeser had already checked into them. The staff had rejected Mr. Anderson twice. So what he was looking for Mr. Reeser to do was something that otherwise wouldn't have been done, and that was the bribe offer. That was the intent to influence an official act. Because of that, I believe it's very clear that 2C1.1 should apply. Something that counsel said that I think was very telling was that perhaps 2C1.1 could apply. It could go either way. And I think why that's important is this is a clear error standard. And if it's a clear error standard, as Agostino points out, and it could go either way, it's not appropriate to reverse the finding of the district court. In Agostino, the evidence wasn't nearly as powerful of an intent to influence a future action as it was here. In fact, the court noted that the evidence was somewhat muddled, and it wasn't very clear why the payment was given, but still found there was no clear error in applying 2C1.1 over the gratuity guideline. With respect to net benefit, this was obviously litigated ferociously before the district court. One thing that I do want to say, though, is we do have a disagreement with the $41,000 with Eola Road. We think the district court actually erred there, and it should have been double that. I think it's a very clear reason why he erred. Mr. Anderson's value of the property was $870,000. He sold the property for $870,000, his own interest in it. And with the experts that the defense used at sentencing, they said that 10% of that would be a set-aside. 10% of the overall land would be set aside for this pond. And if you simply just take 10% of his $870,000 interest, you'd come up with $87,000, or around that figure. What happened in the district court was he bought into the defense argument that let's half it twice. The overall interest in the property that Mr. Anderson had was a half interest. Therefore, the property itself was worth $1.6, $1.7 million. His half was worth $870,000. The pond, if you take the overall pond of the whole acreage here, would have been double. It would have been about $170,000 worth of land. And Judge Castillo actually did it twice. He halved it twice. He went from Mr. Anderson's property having the interest to say that it's worth $870,000 and then halved it again after he did the pond. So there was error there, but it went to Mr. Anderson's benefit. Now, with respect to Misty Creek and Grand Point Trails, I think that we put on pretty good evidence that the net loss was actually, or net benefit, excuse me, was actually a lot greater to Mr. Anderson than what the district court ultimately found. We showed that the profits for the partnership were $1.2 million, and that Mr. Anderson had a share of that profit of 30%. And that had nothing to do with the overall value of the property. Mr. Anderson had already been paid the value of his property, so we did not ignore that evidence. He was paid $3 million for that property, and that was his interest in the property. The 30% had to do with his net profits. And
that's
if you
the
take
return of capital that your opponent is referring to? Is that
right. Your Honor, he said that we ignored that. However, the market value of that property was $5.9 million. That's what they agreed to in 1998, that he'd sell it for $5.9 million. He had a mortgage of $3 million on that property. And what Aurora LLC did was pay off that mortgage for $3 million and also pay Mr. Anderson $2.9 million up front. So he did have a return of that capital, and that had nothing to do with the profit, the 30% that he earned on it eventually. So I believe that the district court, if anything, underestimated the net benefit that Mr. Anderson would have received. I do want to point out that this would have been harmless error as well, because the district court would have to apply the guidelines in effect at the time of sentencing under Demaree. Demaree had not come out yet at the time of Mr. Anderson's sentencing. And based on the amendments to the guidelines that have increased the punishment for public corruption, anything over $70,000 as a net benefit, Mr. Anderson would be looking at least the guideline range that he had with the previous calculations by the district court. Counsel pointed out the Section 3553A factors, and he touched on deterrence. He said Judge Castillo mentioned all of the governors, the other public officials who had been sentenced around here. Obviously, that is something that the judge could consider. The general deterrence factor and trying to get other people in the future not to commit violations of public corruption statutes. I think there was evidence as well that Mr. Anderson had done this before, as Judge Castillo pointed out. He acted in a very sophisticated manner here. He told Mr. Reeser that all his communications should go forward with Mr. Meisch and not with Mr. Anderson, because it might raise a specter of question about their relationship if those two were talking. And the context actually plays out well on paper and also in tape when Mr. Anderson says on tape, "This is not the first time in Aurora that I've done this before." The hint was that he'd done this before, but just not in Aurora before. And, of course, we know that that itself was a lie, because he had done it in Aurora before. He did it with Mr. Reeser that one time, and then he did it with Mr. Meisch previously. So this was someone who did have an ongoing pattern of bribery and graft. And unless this court has any questions for me, we just ask that you affirm the sentence and conviction of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Anything further, Mr. Craven?
I disagree with the government's math, obviously, but I want to return to the point that we don't really know how Judge Castillo came down in the range of $400,000 on one end to $1 million on the other. He just plain didn't share that with us, he said. Both of you made great arguments. I'm going to come down here. Well, I think we need to know why he came down there. And he doesn't need to write an opinion on it. We don't need pages of explanation. We just need some explanation of how Judge Castillo happened to come down at that point. And we don't have it. Now, as far as deterrence is concerned, I left out Congressman Randy Cunningham. I thought that was a little over the top. Jerry Anderson assuredly has nothing to do with him. And I just, as I said in, I believe, in my reply brief, if this had been the very first public corruption case Judge Castillo had ever had, the first one his court had ever seen, might the outcome have been a little better for my client in a wheelchair on dialysis? I would hope so. And I have to really wonder if that's not the case. I mean, Judge Castillo had obviously been hit hard by those three governors and 20 lawyers and assorted judges and cops. And I really think it's unfair to blame Jerry Anderson for any of that. And I think Judge Castillo also might have listened a little more closely to the medical evidence. I'm very, very concerned that what he said he wanted to avoid, a death sentence, is in fact what we're dealing with here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.